But you, I think it's a little bit more to a thoroughbred racing than most people tend to realize. And that is, your eyes have got to be open to what's going on. You got to have a feel of what's going on at that track. You got to have, when you look at the past performance, you got to get a picture view of what's going to go on in that race. Some people can't do that. They just don't have that. They just don't have that. They have to look at numbers all the time. And I've been at the track and people, and I've been a race and a horse win. And they say, well, how'd you get that horse? Let me see your printout. I didn't need no printout for that horse. Brohammer was down at the Del Mar one day, and there was a horse who had, he had a long layoff in the first race at Del Mar. No, it wasn't. We were playing, we were at Del Mar, but we were playing Hollywood Park. And the horse had a long layoff, and he came out and ran extremely fast the first, his first time, first start after a long layoff. The next time out, the horse bounced. Now, Brohammer's been talking about it. So when I looked at that race, and I looked at the past performance of every horse in there, and this horse had ran extremely well his first time out after the layoff, faster than any of these horses had ever run in their lives. And he had bounced the next time out, so what is he going to do today? He's going to run that race again. He paid $19 and something. And they said, well, how'd you get it? Well, Brohammer's been talking about it all the time. Every time we went to Beaumont, Brohammer would be putting on a workshop or something, he always talked about that. And I says, isn't that right, Brohammer? You don't have to use no computer for this, so it's just go bet it. Then there was another race came up on the turf. That same day, another race came up on the turf. The same thing, where a horse had bounced, and the day he's going to walk away from him, he went wire to wire on the turf. You can just bet all the money you want to bet. But when I see this, I feel it and know that this is what is going to happen. When I analyze the past performance of each horse, I know the horses that came around. I know a slow horse when I see one. And somebody be telling me to make a case for a horse. I says, it's a slow horse. He's too slow to run with these horses. Has no business in this race. These are things that you have to learn. You have to learn them through practice and observation. And being able to make a decision about what's going to happen in the race. There are no bad tracks. All the tracks are good. It's got some bad horses. But all the tracks are good. Some horses just have no business on the racetrack. You got to be able to figure that out. Don't go to making a case for them. You know he has no business there. He should be out in some pasture under the tree resting. And you put your money in. Got him in the business. I'm going to bet this horse, Mary. And I said, okay, go ahead and bet him, you know. I said, but I don't think you'd be better off to send the horse money for hay, or this horse needs to be out somewhere resting. Just last Saturday, I was out at Sacuan, the Indian Reservation, San Diego, and there's a guy was there that I talked to nearly every day. I've been trying to help him to get started with Thermation. So a race comes up, and he started talking about the race, and I told him that there's two horses in this race. Two horses. The two and the three. The kind of energy horse and the one horse. I said, now, the two is going to make the lead. The three is going to be pressing, but the three will never overtake the two unless something bad happens. If the two and the three hook up, the three is going to have to drop out of it, and the one's going to come on. And so all you do is box the 1, 2, 3 for the exacta. And you play the 2 and the 3 to win. And it's betting one horse. I don't get into betting on one horse either. Because I've seen too many things happen when you bet one horse. I bet 2 horses. I don't care how good a horse look. He don't look that good. I'm telling you. You ever been at the track and you bet a single horse and the jockey falls off right out the gate? And the other, if you bet the other horse who's 10 to 1, you'd be going to the window to collect some money. And you stand up there cussing and raising all that hell. Dude, I'm not going to do that. I've had it happen too many times. Got Chris McCarron up, and everybody said, oh, Chris McCarron's on this horse, you know, and he's 4 to 1. You know, it's a good thing, because I know what Chris going to do in the horse. You look at the first call. He's calling the horse, you wonder, where's Chris McCarron and that horse? And you look back at the gate, they still there. No, not me. I'm going to bet 2 horses. That's why Howard came with this 2-horse thing. I realized that. It didn't take me long to figure that out. But this fella I was telling you about, and sure enough, when they headed down the backside, the 2-horse took the lead, and that was it. The 3-horse stayed about 3 lengths behind him, came on, ran second, and the 2-horse paid $17 to win. Nice exacta. And then he had the nerve to ask me, how did I get that horse? The horse in his last race was second by a half, and finished second a half a leg back. I know the horse has got form. Those kind of horses are hard to beat. A horse goes second a neck, goes and hooks up with a horse, that horse ain't hard to beat the next time, and I know that. It's a sharp horse, it's gonna be hard to beat. So I asked him, well, who did you bet? And he told me. He says, I thought I had a good horse. I don't know. I said, I don't know who made you thought that. This horse can't run. Hadn't done any running for 2 years. And you putting your money on it. Yeah, he got zeros all across the money box. I said, did you see that? Horse had 9 starts this year. I haven't been in the money with horse. Ran 3rd one time. And last year, he didn't do no better than that either. You got your money on it. He started crying. Telling me a sad story. Don't tell it to me. And what made me so angry, I've been working with you every day trying to help you. Either I'm a bad teacher, or you hard to learn, or something. But it happens all the time. It really do. It happens all the time because some people, I think they see a horse's name and they really get hung up on his name, and so they just can't get away from it. And I can see a horse. I can see a horse today that I know is going to be much improved today, and I can make a bet on that horse, maybe a show bet or something on that horse. And what I'll do is I'll record that, kind of make a record of that horse in my mind. I don't write his name down. Sometimes I don't even remember his name until I see it. When I see it, then I know who it is. But that's the way I do it. Next time out, I want to make sure that I take a look at him, because sometimes those trainers do have sense enough to put a horse in the right kind of race. A lot of times they don't. When you see horses and you're at a track and you see the trainer got a good horse, been running extremely well on the turf, and here today he's got him on the main track. It's the 8-horse field and 5 of them been on the turf on today they're on the main track. And those kind of things, I don't have much faith in trainers. Very little, and very little in jockeys either. Some of them jockeys, you think they're riding backwards. You know, they're on your horse, and where's that food? You know, he's somewhere holding your horse back. Your horse is a front runner, goes to the lead, he's back there holding, fighting the horse all the way around the track. You know, I just go sit down, well, I lost that one. Where'd they get him from? Because some of those jockeys are not too swift, so don't put no confidence in them. Or they can do some of the darndest things sometimes. And some of those trainers, my goodness. Trainer got a good horse. Ran extremely well the last two races on the main track. He's ready for winning on the main track. He puts him in a third race. You see it? You see it every day. You say, well, what's this fool's doing? But you want him to train your horse? I wouldn't want him to train my horse. Fine. Some people say, why don't you get a horse? I don't want no horse. What can I do? I get a horse and get some of these trainers. Yeah, I sit with him at the races a lot. He owned some horses. He sold some and gave some away. Get rid of them. But there are no bad tracks. There are no bad programs in the methodology. They're all good programs. They'll handle any track. First time in Kansas City, first race up there, won it. Didn't even get a chance to run it through, no races through the computer that night. Running around with Elgin Smith all through the night, eating breakfast, 4 o'clock in the morning. Get a chance to do no races. Just go out to the track and match them up and play them. First horse I bet paid $9-something. This year, the first horse I bet paid $10.40 at Kansas City. Because I believe in methodology, and I believe in me, and I go out and do what I've got to do. Thank you very much. Back there, on your break, they have your free program, if you want to pick it up. They also have some copies of Pace Makes the Race. They've got all sorts of things. And we brought in three lady hustlers back there. They're really going to... That's how you don't do anything. What we're going to do now is take a break. Spencer's crew is going to move the tables, and you're all going to be able to sit up close, because Tom's presentation will be built around the rear screen projector, and then Jimmy and Tom McCray will demonstrate ThoroughNation on the rear screen. So for the rest of the day and night, we will not be using the tables, because tonight the phase one of the demonstration will come on with the rear screen. So the tables will disappear, but bear that in mind when you come back, except for Joe Ray's table, which Spencer will be sitting at too. No, you'll have to take your stuff with you, because the tables will not be there.
The chairs still here.
Oh, the chairs. You get chairs. Yes, Al, you get chairs.
Well, I need this table up on the chairs.
There you go. It's like waking up in the morning. The way we're going to approach this is that we'll work from now until about 12:45, and then we'll break for an hour if you're going to have lunch, and pick it up again at 1:45. In fact, we'll break for an hour and 15 minutes. We'll pick it up at 2 o'clock and start again. And what I want to do is take the first race in the sequence, which is the sixth race at Bay Meadows, and we're going to work that one together as a group. And I'll kind of steer you one direction and set some of the guidelines that we're going to use. And then once we've completed that race, we'll take about 20-25 minutes for you to work on another race by yourself, and then we'll kind of cover through that. Then I have 4 other races, and what I'm going to do is just kind of draw an imaginary line down the middle of the room, and half the room will take 2 of the races, the other half the other 2. That doesn't mean you don't look at all 4, but then I'll kind of conduct a discussion with half the room, with the other half contributing if they want, and then the other half back and forth, so you can, everybody can keep up with what everybody else is doing. Spencer?
Yes.
It's my back there too, so they can see their sheets. Oops, I said that word again. Let's start with some contender guidelines that I'll be using. Now, these are races that I handicapped when I was here last time, and I just accumulated them as I went. One's at Bay Meadows. I think I've got 3 at Laurel, 1 at New York, and 1 at Meadowlands. And you can go through the early ESP designations if you'd like, we will do a little bit of that, but for the most part, that will just, we want to save time, and we'll just kind of go beyond that, because only in one race is it terribly important. The contender guidelines that we're going to use are the same ones that most of you have seen in the follow-up just recently, and I'm going to cover them with you briefly. Now, these are not set in stone, so they're there to be overcome if you can make a good, a rational case to use the horse. But basically what they are is that we're going to use the Scott designation of up close, at the stretch call primarily, but also the finish, of course. And if the horse is in up very quickly, if the horse is running in class or up in class, then you want the horse to have been up close at the stretch call in its last race. Is that clear enough? Up close, and in a sprint, up close is about 2.5 lengths, and in a route, it's about 4. And if you don't kill a horse for one length. That's just a basic guideline, and then we're going to try to stay with that. Now, if the horse is dropping in class, we want that same thing at the second call. Doesn't have to be up close later than that. So the horse is dropping from, say, 20 to 12.5, for example. And the horse is up close at the second call in the race it's dropping from, then that's acceptable as a contender. Now, those are pretty lenient. You'll find you throw out a lot of stiffs. But we will override them as we go, and as anything else comes to mind, we'll talk through them. There is, on this race, if you'll look at the second page of this Bay Meadows race, that's on page 40-something. 41? 42. All right. On the second page, you will find two adjustments made to Ballard Canyon and to Molly O'Day. Now, the Ballard Canyon adjustment is from a part-time chart that equates Fairplex with Bay Meadows. Now, when we get to the Laurel races, I will have it written in, the Laurel versus the Pimlico adjustment. Other than that, there's no problem with them. And in the case of Molly O'Day, I've also adjusted her last race so that you have apples and apples in that one.